This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
Kurt Elling is among the world's best-known jazz singers. He has a rich baritone and a passion for improvisation. Over the years, the Jazz Journalists Association has named him Male Singer of the Year a half dozen times. Elling is a multiple Grammy nominee and a Grammy winner. And when he stopped by our studio recently, it was early in the day for a jazz singer.
Get my posture right for you.
Even so, Elling agreed to sing for us. He chose Frank Sinatra's The Night We Called It a Day.
There was a moon out in space, but a sigh drifted over its face. You kissed me and went on your way. The night we called it a day.
This Wednesday, Kurt Elling will be performing with the Kluvers Big Band from Denmark at the Wilbur Theater in Boston. This is Elling and the band performing the Joe Jackson number, Stepping Out.
Now, the mist across the window hides the lines, but nothing hides the color
Kurt Elling, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us about this project with the Kluvers Big Band from Denmark. How did you get hooked up with them?
I went to the town where the Kluvers Band is based to do a gig with my own quartet. Jens Kluver, the gentleman who 30 years ago started the Kluvers Big Band, caught my set, invited me back for, if it wasn't the following year, it was the year just after, to hit with the big band. And we started a really nice relationship. They've hosted me so well and so lovingly every time. And they love the music and they swing really hard. And then Jens called me and he said, Kurt, you know, we've got this money from the Crown Prince of Denmark, who is our sponsor now. We'd love to come to the States. We really need some help. You know, who's going to come in here? The Kluvers Band.
Right,
if we come, would you help us? And I said, well, of course, man, you know, because they're like family to me. So
it's good. They've got such a great sound. Scandinavia and big band sound. I hadn't made that connection.
Well, actually, there are several big bands based in Scandinavia, in Sweden, in Norway, in Denmark, for sure. And it's because, you know, there were so many musicians of high, high caliber. Dexter Gordon, Ben Webster, people who went over because they couldn't keep their cabaret cards in New York because they were having maybe some kind of drug problems or substance abuse problems. And Scandinavia, of course, had a much more enlightened way of helping people out with that kind of situation.
And liberal policies around those
liberal issues. Liberal policies and ways to help them get over it that weren't just draconian. And so cats would go over and they would hang for, you know, sometimes as much as a decade and a half. So there's a long and rich, as long and rich as any tradition is in jazz.
It's so interesting to hear that. Well, the band has a great sound. I wanted to play a little bit more. One of the things you do so well is scat singing, and there's a great moment in that recording that we were hearing earlier, the Joe Jackson tune, Stepping Out, that I wanted to play. Let's just listen for a minute. When you do that kind of singing, it sounds so spontaneous, so improvised, so in the moment. Is it? I mean, or is there some choreography involved in that as well?
Well, what we do as jazz musicians is we practice improvising melodies. You're always trying to find the thing that hasn't been done before. But the homework happens when you're in your own studio, when you're in your own workspace, with the meticulous kind of craftsmanship that teaches your mind over time to learn a language so that when you are in front of an audience, you're responding to their energy, you're responding to the things that other musicians are playing, and again, you're trying to transcend that which you've done before.
Tell me how you got started as a singer. I understand that it began for you singing in a Lutheran choir in Illinois. Is that right?
Yeah, my father was a Kapellmeister, so I grew up always hearing Bach and performing Bach and Brahms and, you know, straight music. But that gave me a very real sense of how to sing well. It gave me a sense of why, of the joy of singing for its own sake, and the feeling that a group of people getting together to be invested in music can have a spiritual transcendent experience together, because music does have an ability to pull people into the present moment.
Mm. That's sort of the beauty of live performance, isn't it? And when you're connecting with an audience like that.
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so.
I agree. Wow. And when did jazz come into the picture for you?
Well, I always have had a sense of a swinging sound. I remember being, you know, going on car trips with my folks as a kid, and they would always play what they used to call music of your life stations. So it was Bing Crosby and Louis Armstrong and Miss Peggy Lee. You know, they always got off. So I have this kind of secondhand nostalgia for World War II music. And so I already knew a lot of the jazz standards when in college cats down the hall were playing Dexter Gordon, or they were playing Dave Brubeck, or they were playing Herbie Hancock. And very quickly I realized I didn't want to be just the singer who sings the in chorus and then everybody else gets to improvise for 20 minutes and then I sing the out chorus again. That just left me out. So I just jumped right in and, you know, nobody was... kind enough to make me stop.
Well, I want to play something off of your CD, Night Moves, which came out in 2007, and you're singing a Betty Carter tune called Tight, which I just adore.
I don't know where my gal is. Where can she be? What is she doing? I've been looking and searching, asking questions all over town, my baby.
Such a great sound. And in terms of your vocal style, I wanted to ask you about Frank Sinatra as a singer. I've read interviews with you where you credit him with being a huge influence. What did he offer you?
Sinatra definitely had a signature element to his singing. He really defines what it is to be a man with all male capabilities and frailties in front of a great swinging Count Basie orchestra. I mean, what most people think of when they think of big band singing is Frank Sinatra, and rightfully so. He really exemplifies the pinnacle peak of what's possible in a swinging context. Now, what I'm trying to do with the Clovers Band is to certainly touch upon that and also to build upon that.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your latest CD, The Gate, which came out last January. This was produced by Don Was, who's worked with some of the best-known popular musicians, including Rolling Stones, Bonnie Raitt, among others. And on The Gate, you not only interpret songs by people like Miles Davis, but also ones like Joe Jackson, which we played, Al Jarreau, Stevie Wonder, and The Beatles. And I wanted to play a bit of Norwegian Wood by The Beatles, your interpretation. Here it is.
I once had a girl, or should I say, she once had me. She showed me her room, isn't it good, Norwegian wood. She asked me to stay, and she told
Why did you choose that song? I'm just so curious. The Beatles have such a huge catalog. What was it about Norwegian Wood that you liked?
I just really heard something strong in that melody line that wanted to express itself with a different rhythmic element, and I just sort of took it from there. A lot of the moves I make, I mean, it's very intuitive. It's a very intuitive way of going through the world. You just hope that the intuition continues to have some good ideas, and then it's all discipline, because then you have to really nail it down and say, well, what do I really hear, and does this really make sense?
That sounds like a great definition of what jazz is: intuition and then discipline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is, because it makes me think of when my daughter was three, she'd see a picture. We'd be looking through whatever, and she'd, I want to draw a pony too. Okay, well, you draw a pony. So then she would take the crayon and just make contact with the paper, scratch, 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 just randomly, and then look, Daddy, a pony.
Yeah.
So the intuition is right, her desire is right, but the craftsmanship that has to come along with that for there to be an actual picture of a pony is another thing altogether.
Mm. This intuition and this urge to cover a song like Norwegian Wood, I'll just stick with that example, that has sort of been part of the kind of popular music vocabulary for generations. Is it chancy? Is it risky? Is it scary a little bit?
I don't think of it as scary unless either the idea or the follow through doesn't justify itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I do take seriously that music fans take their music personally.
Sure.
And jazz people, man, more than just about anybody out there, I think, really want to protect their heroes. But as a jazz fan and as a music fan, I have that too. And I don't do things to disrespect anything. I do things because I feel like there's a greater flexibility in what melodies we have access to now. The same melody comes to life in a new way. And I think that's a way of honoring the music.
Let me ask you about your writing. You're known for writing and performing words over recorded improvised jazz solos. I wanted to ask you when writing first came into the picture.
What you're describing is a trick of jazz called vocalese. It's a very singular form of lyric writing. So you take a Dexter Gordon solo, for instance, or a Miles Davis solo. Mm-hmm. Then you write a lyric that fits the rhythms and the rhyme schemes of the instrumental solo. It's about working with and making language fit the contours of contemporary jazz.
Give me an example of a good example of that vocalese that you were just describing.
Well, from the most recent record, The Gate, there's a lyric that I wrote over a John Scofield guitar solo on a thing called Samurai Cowboy. And here it is.
You know, we have the best engineer in the business.
You dig everything in life, everything you've seen, everywhere you've been, you've been thinking all of the time. Everything that's happened to you has been made or construed to brood, at least passively, in the life of the mind.
The guy whose work I follow chiefly is the greatest of jazz lyricists, who is John Hendricks,
mm-hmm.
who just turned 90, just a couple of weeks ago.
90? I had no
90
idea.
90 years old. He plays great still. It's just he's a really profound gift.
Have you performed with him?
I have done numerous times, yeah. We were just together with, it was John and Al Jarreau and me over at the North Sea Festival. And really, as soon as I figured out what Lambert, Hendricks, and Ross were up to back in the 50s, and as soon as that happened, it was like the light bulb turned on, and I started to try to write these things.
I see.
This is from the steal from the rich pile. I try to get with smart people. And smart writers, and then figure out what I can do to transform that into something that's signature for the people who come out to my shows and hook up to our records.
Kurt Elling, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in, and thank you for singing for us.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure.
Into the night, into the light.
Kurt Elling's latest CD is The Gate. He'll be performing Wednesday with the Kluver's Big Band from Denmark at the Wilbur Theater in Boston. For more information about how to get tickets, go to our website, radioboston.org.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.
What